A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 104. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Ace of Wands. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
As we discussed last time, Ace of Wands was a children's series from ITV that ran for three series, 1970 through 1972. And it was about a magician called Tarot, and it mixed stage magic with real magic or supernatural powers, including telepathy and different kinds of psychic powers as well. So it was an interesting, unusual combination of things. So let's get into things a little bit more and talk a little bit about the first two series, which are actually missing, so we haven't been able to watch them. But let's talk about those a bit.
Okay, so what we know about the first two series was that it set up the team of Tarot the Magician and his two assistants. And to begin with, they mainly, it would seem from the stories and the scripts, they mainly tackled fairly straightforward criminals. And the only sort of paranormal feature at the start of the show was Tarot's psychic link with his assistant Luli, which obviously helped with his stage magic, but also helped in them basically solving crimes and mysteries. So that's how it started out for the first series.
They did start adding some more supernatural elements into the second series. Notably, with the first story in the second series, they introduced this character, Mr. Stabs, and had this story that was actually quite popular and well-remembered. It's unfortunate we can't see it, but it was quite popular and well-remembered. And it sort of set up the idea, or started to set up the idea, that Tarot and company would be going up against, you know, things that are more supernatural or have these types of psychic and mind control powers, and there would be some of that fighting fire with fire kind of thing. But along the way, in those first couple series, they had all sorts of villains. They encountered mad scientists, of course, and Zulu warriors, and even Nazis. So they had all sorts of things coming in as villains, as you might expect in this kind of early 70s children's show like this.
Okay. And also, unfortunately, what we'd expect for this period was that they were recorded, we presume, on the expensive reusable videotape. And sadly, the first two series were scrapped by Thames Television, and no known copies survive, so we can't watch the first two series.
Yes, unfortunately, about all that we have remaining are the scripts and a few scattered photographs. We don't have that many photographs, and we don't have any audio or video from it. The story that was given on the documentary and the DVDs was that at the time, the people at Thames would go around, I think this was maybe once a year, from office to office and ask the production team for each series if they wanted their series saved and archived. And either it would be archived, or if they didn't want it archived, it would be wiped. And if the production team was not there in the office when they came around and asked, then it would be wiped. And when they came around to ask about Ace of Wands, the production team was out rehearsing the series. So for that reason, it was wiped, and there were no other copies that survived, unfortunately.
Which is a shame, because it would have been nice to see some of the stuff from the first two series.
Yes, I would have loved to see some of those other characters and some of the other stories, for sure. Now, the third series, we have been watching, it does exist, and it changed things up. They had a significant change in the production team. Several people left and were replaced. And also the assistants were replaced. So Luli and Sam were no longer there. And Luli was replaced by Mickey. Sam replaced by her brother Chaz. And it gave you something that was a little different, still with Michael McKenzie as Tarot. And they changed things around, so there were many more stories where the opponents, the villains, had powers of their own, and often psychic powers and different things happening. So it was the type of thing where these people who needed to be stopped, well, the people who were there who were able to do that were Taro and Mickey and Chaz helping them out.
That's right. And if we get into talk to some more of the specific stories from Series 3, the next story after the Meddlers was a four-episode story called The Power of Atep. And this was the Egyptian story we referred to in the last episode. Taro and Mickey appear to be sharing dreams about a strange Egyptian cult and a mummy which may have Taro's face on it. And this was the episode where they travelled to Egypt, which was recreated quite lovingly in a sandpit somewhere nearby with borrowed animals from a local zoo. And they used some costume and makeup and lighting to make it look sufficiently hot and arid. And that worked quite well. And of course, it played into that early 1970s interest in Egypt, and in particular in the Tutankhamun exhibition, which had been on in London or was about to come to London, I think. So it was around about that time. There was big interest in Egypt, and this episode, or this story rather, played into all that. And as you say, Brian, it also featured a villain who did seem to have some powers of his own. So Taro coming up against somebody who may actually equal his own powers. And that was nicely played out.
Yes, it was a neat serial that sort of upped the ante and had them traveling to different places in the world and had, brought some things in from Taro's past and gave you some interesting sort of things with our heroes coming up against more powerful villains. So it was quite a neat story, I thought. There was another later story called Peacock Pie, where Taro and company encounter a man called Mr. Peacock, who has the ability to make people see whatever he wants them to see. And he is very powerful in this way and can confuse people and almost control people, and has used this to rob banks, basically, just because he can. So they had some very strange things happening with him, and that was a very interesting serial. It didn't have the traveling around the world and the exotic locations, but it had some very strange and interesting tension in there that was quite good.
It's one of the favorite stories, I think, of Tony on the Facebook group again, who mentioned Peacock Pie and mentioned the three leads sort of working well in this particular story. So, a neat little story.
Yeah, a good turn from the villain in there as well.
Yeah. There was a couple of other stories as we went along, which we won't go into in detail. We'll leave you to discover those for yourself. The third series does, though, without giving too much away, does end with somewhat of a cliffhanger, and seems to quite clearly set up for the fourth series, which, as we've mentioned, was discussed. And I think the actors believed that they were going to be doing a fourth series. But by then, ITV had replaced Pamela Lonsdale with a new head of children's television. And whoever this was apparently wanted to move away from a magic show and into a science fiction show. And so Ace of Wands did not get commissioned, and something else did, Brian.
Yes, I guess they wanted to go from this sort of strange genre to something that was more traditionally science fiction. And that was The Tomorrow People. And the next year, in 73, The Tomorrow People was launched, and it ran, as we discussed in a previous episode, for quite a number of years.
So a little interesting sort of handing on the baton from Ace of Wands to The Tomorrow People, and no fourth series. And so the slightly surprising cliffhanger that you'll see at the in the last episode never gets resolved.
That's right. As a good investor, I have a right to know a little.
You mean you have a way of making people say things?
Mm. Well, somebody else has a way of making people do things. The other crew delivered their cargo to an empty house in a deserted street, convinced that it was this bank.
Oh, yeah, and that's a good one.
What do you mean?
Well, obvious. Payroll, they were on it. Money.
Not necessarily.
What, with a cock and ball story like that? Bentner's coat hangers, that lot.
It's him.
What?
The man I was talking to right here.
Nah, could be anyone.
No, it's him. I know it is.
Spin-offs. We'd like to talk about spin-offs on British Invaders from these shows. There are a few for Ace of Wands. As was very common at the time, we had some stories and articles appearing in ITV's own house children's magazine, which was called Lookin', and you can find some of the comic stories from that online. So fairly common to see them in Lookin' at the time.
So there was a weekly run of comics in Looking for a Ace of Wands. Is that what it was?
I believe so, yes. And I think you can track those down.
There was also something based on Mr. Stabs, who was a character we mentioned from the season 2 premiere serial, Seven Serpents, Sulfur and Salt, which sort of set up some of the supernatural elements a little bit more. And that character, written by Trevor Preston, was used again by Preston in an episode of a children's anthology series called Shadows. And in Shadows, they did a little episode called Dutch Schultz's Shoes. That was in 1975. And it featured Russell Hunter reprising his role as Mr. Stab. So it was like a little Mr. Stab spinoff, one-off play a couple of years later.
Yeah, very strange because, you know, Trevor Preston obviously loved this character of Mr. Stabs because he used him yet again in another spin-off, again, another children's drama show called Dramarama. And for that, in 1984, Trevor Preston wrote an episode called Mr. Stabs, the same character, but this time played by a very popular television actor, David Jason, who does a slightly strange interpretation of the Mr. Stabs role. And it's a slightly odd standalone story, but there it is, this character breaking out from Ace of Wands.
And of course, we haven't seen the original appearance of Mr. Stabs in Ace of Wands because that's missing. But those two spin-off plays really don't have that much to do with Ace of Wands, but it's sort of interesting to see them.
Yeah. Also of interest is that if you go to the Ace of Wands website, you will find that there is some fan fiction up there featuring Taro and his assistants. So the stories do continue in some form up there on the website.
Indeed. Now let's get into a little bit of some of our thoughts about Ace of Wands, the good and the bad, if you will. So, Eamon, what did you think about Ace of Wands?
Well, it's a fairly zippy show. It's 25-minute episodes with a commercial break, and the stories run over 3 or 4 episodes. So it does sort of move along fairly quickly, which is good. There's not too much in the way of padding and bits where it sort of lags slightly. What about you, Brian? What did you like from the show?
Yeah, I think that idea of how the stories were paced out in the short episodes, that was nice. I'd agree with that. I liked the mix of the sort of psychic powers with the stage magic tricks. So you had stage tricks that would normally be done with someone giving signals, well, instead of using hand signals or something, they're using telepathic signals. And, you know, they'd be doing things that would use telepathic powers when they were fighting someone, but they'd also use a bit of sleight of hand or a little bit of a trick for doing something. So this sort of trickery and stage magic mixed with the actual powers that the characters had, that was sort of interesting.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of his stage magic show, actually, for Taro. We don't see a great deal of it, so it would have been nice to see a few more of his set routines. As I say, we see him rehearsing with Mickey, and we also see him jumping off the boat in his straitjacket to do his escapology trick. But a bit more of that would have been interesting, I thought.
Yes, we do see some of it, but as you say, with these 3 and 4 episode serials and how they were doing things, it didn't quite have the time to fit in too much of that.
No. We've got some memorable bad guys. We've got some quite good villains turning up, haven't we, Brian?
Yes, there certainly are some. Mr. Peacock is a favorite of mine, but there are others as well. There are some interesting things there.
And we know that if we, you know, look at the cast list, that if you're familiar with British TV actors of the time, you'll see a lot of names that crop up in a lot of other genre shows. So you'll see Brian Wilde as Mr. Peacock, but you'll also find Sylvia Coleridge, who we talked about in Dominic Hyde recently. Kevin Stoney is in the first series, along with Dave Prowse himself is in the first series of Ace of Wands, apparently.
Yes, Darth Vader on Ace of Wands.
Darth Vader's body on Ace of Wands. And also an actor, a very imposing actor called John Barron, who we saw playing a scientist in Time Slip and who will crop up in a future show when he appears in Doomwatch. He was also in the first series, I believe. So lots of interesting actors turning up as villains and giving good turns, I think.
Yes, and one of the sidekick-type characters in the first and second series was played by Tony Selby. And he's done a lot of British TV, of course, and British Invaders listeners may remember him as Glitz on Doctor Who in the 1980s.
Yep, there you go. Yes, as you say, Tony Selby, loads of British television to his name. We've got this catchy title sequence, which we really liked, I think, Brian, and that ITV were very good at them at this time in the 70s, along with their openings for Time Slip and The Tomorrow People and also that other children's show I mentioned, Magpie. But it's really good. It's quite impressive, the animation and the song that goes with it. And it does help, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, this was only a few years after another classic opening coming out of ITV, which was The Prisoner.
Oh, yes, of course.
But yes, it was a great little title sequence, and the pop song theme music they did with it was very much a fun thing and helped set the tone for it quite well. I like that.
Okay.
So what did you think was weaker with Ace of Wands? What were its problems?
Well, we mentioned in the last episode that this was a very limited budget children's show, and they had this severe constraint about not leaving the studio and only using studio sets for most of the time. And the sets were a little bit dodgy in places. You know, they obviously worked well when they took them into an Egyptian tomb, where they obviously decided to splash out a little bit on that episode. But some of the sets are a little bit dodgy for the time, I guess, Brian.
Yes, I thought the boat that Taro lived on, he had this houseboat, I thought that looked pretty good, actually.
Yes, that does look good. And the sort of photographer's studio that Chaz and Mickey live in this old marketplace, that was well done as well.
That looks very good, yes.
Yeah, very smart.
Their production values were a bit of a mixed bag. Sometimes they did some things that looked really good for early 70s TV, and some of them were a little not so much.
Okay. What about yourself? Anything else you noticed that wasn't perhaps so good?
Well, some of the shows were not as well written. There were some very good ones, and there were some memorable villains, as you said, but some they went into the villains and the way that the things were put together and performed were a little bit weaker. Some of the villains were sort of impressive and really came off very well, and some of them got to be a little bit more absurd.
Yeah. And the one thing I noticed with the writing I had a slight problem with was when something mysterious and apparently paranormal happens, and Taro will explain it to Chaz and Mickey by saying, oh, it's just a variation on an old trick. But he won't explain it any further than that. And never does as the show goes on. And you think, well, could you tell us what the old trick was? Because to us, it seemed to be something supernatural. So that seemed, in places, a little bit lazy, I thought. They wouldn't actually explain what was going on. And I prefer the episodes where he was able to demonstrate the actual trick that was being used to scare people or whatever.
Yes, that definitely was an element there. And I see what you mean by that. It seemed like it was sort of referencing the idea that magicians don't like to share their techniques, so he wouldn't want to come out and explain things necessarily. But you're right, it was overused.
Yeah, yeah. What about the performances here, Brian, particularly of our three leads?
I thought they were okay, but for the most part, only okay. They were reasonably good, but not fantastic by any stretch. They were okay.
Yeah. Generally okay. I think, you know, the chap who plays Chaz was very good as the cheeky chappy, the cheeky photographer. Taro and Mickey on the whole are pretty good, but they do have their occasional moments where they appear a little bit wooden, often when they're doing their psychic connection, and that maybe is just part of it. It's supposed to look a bit strange when they're linking their minds. But on the whole, not too bad. Nothing stand out. It would have been nice to have seen the performance of Russell Hunter as Mr. Stabs in the second season, but of course we can't watch that.
Yes, I would have loved to see that. I would have loved to see Tony Selby as Sam and Judy Lowe as Lily.
Yeah.
But we don't get to see those. This does have the issue, as sometimes happens, that it was definitely driven by the idea that the main characters would be quite young. And you had these rather young actors, and that sometimes leads to performances that aren't quite as strong. And while they were okay here, I think there may have been a little bit in the way of issues with that. And in one or two situations, like the final serial, I think we saw that with the the villains as well. They were very young, and some of the acting was not quite as strong as one might hope.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the final serial, the villains were very much chosen for their looks, which, you know, fitted the story. But as you said, may have left some of their acting something to be desired.
Yes.
Look, I didn't ask you to.
But we know each other, don't we?
Yes, I suppose we do. My brother and my friend will be back soon.
Not for a while. They've been held up.
By you?
By themselves.
You robbed the bank, didn't you?
Me? I've never even been inside there.
But the security van...
Very sophisticated, this place.
Is it?
Yes. Yes, I suppose you're sophisticated too, and your friends. Yes. Must be a very interesting life. Me, I've never been one for that kind of thing. Simple ways, simple tastes, that's me.
Oh, yes?
Yes, I've never been one for extravagances.
Like stealing £40,000?
Yes, I only did that to see if it could be done. I like a challenge, you see. Also, I wanted to pay my rent.
So, shall we talk about the availability of Ace of Wands?
Oh, yes.
So, there was a 2007 Region 2 DVD release, which contains all the surviving episodes from Season 3. That's 20 episodes. Plus, it contains those two spin-off standalone short plays, Dutch Schlitz's Shoes and Mr. Stabs. There's a documentary about the making of the show with interviews with the cast and the producers. There is also an extensive viewing notes booklet, which, as ever, contains spoilers. You probably want to read it as you go along or after you've watched the episodes.
The booklet does also contain the lyrics for the theme music, so you can actually figure out what they're saying.
Yep.
It's hard to recognize them from listening sometimes.
It is, but yes, but you will be able to work out what the lyrics are. Now, that box set is currently on Amazon here in the UK for about £28 at the moment, although you can find it cheaper on Amazon Marketplace. It's also available on the rental site. You can rent it from Love Film if you just want to pick up the first disc and see what you think of it.
Now, there is no Region 1 version, so it's not available in North America except as an import. It is available on Amazon.com as an import for about $36 to $40 US, and it's not listed on Amazon.ca or on Netflix. It may be depending that the least expensive way to get it in North America would actually be to order it directly from the UK.
There are a few clips on YouTube. In particular, you can watch the rather snappy and snazzy and psychedelic title sequence, which we really recommend you go and do after listening to this. And I think there's a few other clips from the show and clips of Ozymandias the Owl and so on that you can find on YouTube.
Right. So I think that brings us to our recommendations. So, Eamon, what did you think of Ace of Wands?
Well, actually, Brian, I found this one slightly difficult. I watched all the 20 episodes, and I don't think there's anything terribly wrong with it. I found it a little bit dull. You know, I think they are trying hard. There are moments that stand out as being very interesting, but it does sort of remind me that at the time it was a very basic, I think, just a children's TV show. So compared with other stuff we've looked at from around the same time, I would probably go for Time Slip before I went for Ace of Wands. And I think Time Slip at the moment is cheaper than Ace of Wands. I would probably also go for one of our favourites. I would go for The Children of the Stones, although that is getting a bit more expensive these days to get hold of copies of that. But I wouldn't dismiss Ace of Wands. If you've seen those other shows and you're looking for something else, then this is certainly one to have a look at and consider, Brian.
Okay, I will say that Ace of Wands is a fun show. It's not at the top of my list, and I think you're right that those other shows are better and maybe ones that you should look for first. But Ace of Wands is a fun little show. Some of the serials are better than others. Some I found were really very good, and some were sort of okay. I don't think any of them were terrible, although certainly there were some that were not great. But it's a fun show. I would say maybe one to check out. And if you are a fan of P.J. Hammond's work, Sapphire and Steel in particular, which I am, it is interesting to see his writing on a different show, on an earlier show, because you can very much recognize his writing style in some of those serials. And I think I should mention that the DVD set for this is a very good one. They did a very good job with it.
So it's a cautious recommendation from us both here on British Invaders. And as ever, we'd like to give you the casting vote. So if you remember Ace of Wands, or if you choose to watch it after hearing us talk about it, please let us know what you think. Please get some feedback in on the Facebook group or by email or on the comments on the webpage, and we'll try and cover them in a future bonus show.
Absolutely. This one is quite well remembered. And if you watched this when you were younger, why not come back and take another look and tell us what you think? We'd love to hear about that. So, in summary, Ace of Wands was a series about a stage magician called Taro, who also had these mind-reading type powers and psychic powers. And he had assistants and people working with him who worked with the stage shows and worked with other things, also with their own psychic powers and telepathic type powers. And they would go up against various types of villains, some of whom were mundane and some of whom had more types of powers of their own. And they had all sorts of adventures and things going up against different types of villains and criminals doing all sorts of strange things.
An interesting little show, one that we would cautiously recommend and would very much like to hear your views on.
Yeah, it's fun stuff.
So, next time, please join us again. We're jumping forward. We're on the BBC. We're in 2006. And we're out in space with a comedy show called Hyperdrive. Some fun stuff to talk about on our next two episodes.
Yes, definitely. Comedy in space should be fun.
And it's going to feature one of the British Invaders' regular actors making yet another appearance. We'll tell you who next time.
Yeah, stay tuned to find out who that is. So you can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us, and until next time, this is Eamon in England saying goodbye.